You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest in the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to apply. All right, so today is a very special episode. I have Scott Sheeran on the line. He is CEO of Veteran Talent at Climb. And Scott is also an author in our recent release book. So we're going to talk about this. This is awesome. And get this, Scott has recently also just released a new podcast. So we're going to get into that as well. So really excited. First off, Scott, to work with you today. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Awesome, Adam. Thank you for the invite and excited to be here and chatting with you.
Man, we got a lot to talk about. What you're doing over at Climb, a book, a podcast, man. You got a lot going on, so I'm excited to work with you. And just to get this episode started and kicked off, we'll start it the way we start them all with our Mission Matters Minute. So, Scott, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Scott, what mission matters to you?
What mission matters to me, this is the same sort of message I give to all of our staff and anybody we work with, but it's just kind of a deliberate and acute focus on the creation of value. Yeah. That's our mission. So, I mean, whether that's value for the veterans we partner with, job seekers, the clients that we work with, any of our staff or internal employees, anybody that we touch, we acutely focus on the provision of value. Even any little changes on the back end that come to me, you know, you have to ask yourself before you bring those changes to me, how is this change manifesting value for the users that are going to be using the platform or the service or anything else? So what value is it creating? And I think that's sort of manifests itself into success. I mean, I think that's what is the axiomatic foundation of success is whoever has the ability to create more value.
I love it. Love bringing mission-based individuals on the show, and also your focus on veteran talent, and that's one of the reasons why we chose you for the book, because we definitely wanted to hone in on that. And I guess just for those that maybe haven't caught any of our previous work, or this is the first time they're engaging with the platform, maybe tell us a little bit about your backstory and really how you got started as an entrepreneur.
Well, you know, I think like everybody's journey, it's chaotic and confusing. So I think I always knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I was raised by entrepreneurs, raised by business owners, raised by a family of sales guys. So, I mean, I think I was always from birth destined to be a sales guy. I really just never shut up. You know, I mean, that's anybody that knows me will confirm that. So I've always got a lot to say. You know, but when I came out and started getting into the workforce, I started going to college initially. Way back when, right after high school, really for political science. But I found out right away that was not right for me. And then, you know, I'm not one of those guys that went through high school knowing that he was going to join the military, knowing that I was going to be a Marine or anything like that. I had no clue. I was just going to go to college and go to law school. But college didn't work out as well as I had thought that freshman year. It was actually my senior year of high school. I went on a post-secondary option. So instead of going to high school, I went to college and I just sucked at it. And I was immature, you know, and doing things that I shouldn't be doing. And this recruiter knocked on my door one afternoon, and I'm sitting there with a goatee halfway down, you know, because a lot of people also don't know this all these years later, but I grew up as a hardcore punk rocker in high school.
Did not know that.
Yeah. So hair all the way down, you know, I grew up listening to Misfits and Danzig and, you know, Dead Kennedys and you name it. So I was a punk rocker going to law school, thought I was. And this guy knocked on my door one afternoon, on my mom's door. And I was all in a bad state because I was doing terrible in school and I was there on my high school's dime, you know, so I'm supposed to be performing, but I wasn't. And it was a recruiter from the Marine Corps. And I tried to turn him away right away. I'm just like, oh, no thanks, you know. And he had stripes all up and down his arm. He was a gunnery sergeant, as it turns out. And but right as I'm closing the door, he was like, you know, I wondered if you had time to take a test. And Adam, that got me. You know, that was all it took. I'm like, I love tests.
Wow.
You know? So I let him in. I went and sat in the dining room. I took this test. It was a pre-ASVAB. And that was it. And my brother, who's 10 years older than me, he joined the Army when I was 8 years old. And he had so many conversations with me, like, Scott, whatever you do, you want to join the Army, that's fine. You should join the Air Force. That's where all the money is.
Yeah.
But whatever you do, don't join the Marine Corps. And so that was in the back of my head, too. And I'm like, well, you know, I'll join the Marine Corps. So,
yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah. So that's how I ended up in the Marine Corps. Dropped out of college that first time around and very young, just a teenager, joined the Marine Corps. Ended up getting into intelligence and cryptography. So that's a whole nother story too, but we can get into that some other time. And then of course, after my years in the Marine Corps, when I came home and went to college, college was easy this time around. I was much more mature, much more disciplined. And this time, of course, I already knew I didn't want to do political science because that was horrific. This time around, I think I decided to study finance and economics because I love math and I love markets. And, you know, I watched Charlie Sheen in Wall Street when I was a teenager, and I'm like, I can do that. That's easy. You know?
Yeah.
So I thought I'd be on Wall Street and, you know, screaming across the room and throwing papers all around, and we'd be making lots of money and be a lot of fun. So I did end up getting my degree in finance, and I did end up getting recruited into a firm local to me where I was in Cincinnati, Ohio. So I wasn't on Wall Street, you know, I was with a local company. And I know you have a finance background too, this will resonate with you. But as a young broker, when you come out and get licensed, I was in my late 20s because I had all that time in the Marine Corps, you know, before finishing off college. And you don't get a lot of wealthy people who are just throwing money at you to invest.
Yeah,
you
know, for all the financial advisors out there, they're like, yeah, that doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't work that way.
In the movie, right?
No, exactly. I'm like, this isn't what I saw in the movie at all. You know, but and Charlie Sheen was young. I don't understand. So what it is that you just have to build relationships, which I'm good at. Yeah. And then as your clientele and your family of clients, as they grow in wealth across the decades, so too do you as you're managing their wealth. And so the only real way to make a good amount of money as a young broker, if you want to feed your family and pay your mortgage and pay your bills, is to sell life insurance. And that, because that's what gives you the big premiums and gets you some actual revenue. So then you find yourself in my late 20s, basically going around to all of the people who I loved and respected the most, friends and family and everything else, sitting around dinner tables and asking them if they were aware that they were going to die. And I was like, I tell you what, I mean, that conversation it destroyed me after a year and a half. I mean, I was like, I just can't do this anymore. And I'm a positive person. I mean, there's not an ounce of negativity in me. I don't know why, but it's just, you know, it's just how it is. But having that conversation day in and day out, I mean, it really started to impact me. So I was having a conversation with one of my clients, and he was an old Marine friend of mine. And he owned a veteran recruiting organization, not unlike mine now, you know, interestingly enough. But what they did was career fairs. So they would go around the country and sponsor career fairs for companies. And I had told him we had a networking event at Paul Brown Stadium where the Bengals play. And I was telling him how miserable I was. And he was like, you know, I have a client of mine, and they have a company. They're looking for a sales guy who's a veteran. And that's you. And to go up on Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio, and sell to all the big defense integrators, you know, the Khakis and Boeings and Bearing Points and all of them. And I'm like, well, that sounds interesting. I think I could do that. And so I went and interviewed for that job, and that was with a large IT staffing firm. And I'll be honest with you, Adam, at this point in time in my life, I didn't even know that the recruiting industry existed.
Right.
Didn't even know it was a thing.
You were a finance guy. I mean, you didn't know.
Marine Corps, finance, you know. And the only recruiters that I was aware of were the military recruiters that talked me into going to the Marine Corps. And I knew all about those guys, but I didn't know there was an actual profession of people that were professionally staffing positions for other companies. So, but that's what this company was. They were an IT staffing firm, a big one, Tech Systems. So I am a techie. That's a term in the industry because Tech Systems are so large. The people that come through that company call themselves techies. So I went up and helped to create that, that defense business, IT staffing business out of Wright Pat for them, did that for about 3 years, and then eventually was recruited into Sara Lee, so the big CPG Fortune 500 food company out of Chicago, and they needed somebody to manage their IT recruiting globally, and that was an interesting opportunity to me because I had been selling staffing now for several years, and I thought, it'd be interesting to experience this business from the other side of who's being sold to. So being on the corporate side as opposed to being on the third party side.
Right.
And so that was cool. I mean, it was a really great experience. Came in, but honestly, within my first year there, we all of a sudden started managing a large project to outsource both infrastructure and applications to HP and IBM, which was a total mess. You know, never outsource your entire IT department to two different vendors at the same time. You know,
yeah.
it was just finger pointing. You know, for a year, it's IBM's fault, it's HP's fault, and it's Sara Lee's fault. So anyway, it became evident to me though that they weren't going to need a director of IT recruiting if they didn't have an IT internally. So I wasn't sure what was going to happen, but I ended up taking over as the head of talent acquisition for the bakery. And honestly, you know, to this day, I tell people, they're like, "Oh, so were you just a great recruiter?" No, I really don't think so. It's just that I'm a sales guy that was placed on a corporate HR team, you know, and it's just, and again, like we talked about before, like I don't shut up. So you can put me on a stage and put me in front of 30,000 people. That's perfectly fine with me. It doesn't bother me a bit. So anytime they were like, "Hey, we need somebody from TA, from talent acquisition, to give a presentation at the company meeting," you know, you're going to be on stage, 5,000 people. I'm just the only idiot that's like, "Oh yeah, I'll do that," you know? So then when the CEO in her mind, when she thinks of recruiting, who does she think of?
Right.
The guy that was on stage, you know? So anytime she's like, "Hey, we need to bring Scott down here. We got some questions for him about the recruiting and talent management." So ended up getting, you know, close with Brenda. She's passed on, unfortunately, but she was the CEO of Sara Lee. She was awesome to work with. And so I did that. And honestly, even though I always thought I wanted to be an entrepreneur, I was so comfortable doing that kind of work. And it was very meaningful. They had me on the road, I mean, for years, 100%, just in and out of airports every single week, which that did get old after a while. But sure enough, actually Brenda, her health fell and we had a new guy come in from Amsterdam who took the reins, and he started to basically siphon off expenses and costs into different categories. And to me, it seemed evident. I was like, "Look, you're prepping to sell these brands. That's why you're not having shared expenses in between the brands any longer." And he's, "Oh, no. We're all one Sara Lee, one big happy family." I'm like, "Nah, man." I could see the writing on the wall here because I'm a finance guy. Like, I know I'm a recruiter in your eyes, but, you know, my education is in finance and I see what you're doing. And sure enough, we started to divest all of our brands systematically all across the different food companies. So to this day, when you go and buy a loaf of Sara Lee bread, turn the packaging over and look, and it's not owned by Sara Lee. So they're all owned by different companies. And I got sold like a free agent to a Mexican baking company called Bimbo, 120,000 employees, big company, the Ceviche family out of Mexico City. And they were excited. They were like, "Hey, we've never had a centralized leader for recruiting for the whole company. So, you know, we can bring you down here into Mexico City. This will be great. You know, it'll be a wonderful, wonderful adventure." And at that time, you know, my wife and I were expecting our youngest now. He's almost 10, which is pretty crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. And so, you know, we were pregnant, and just the whole thought about relocating to Mexico City and then having a baby and having no family nearby. And obviously it just wasn't going to work out. So I resigned, and we moved back to Cincinnati, Ohio, which is where she and I are both from. And I had an opportunity to had two opportunities. And one opportunity to take over the recruiting division for Sam Adams, which would have been cool, you know, because I like beer even better than I like bread.
I do.
Yeah. So I was like, "This is cool." I was never a Sam Adams fan, but I was like, "Oh, I'm starting to drink their stuff." I'm like, "It's not bad." And then my other opportunity was with that very first guy. You never know where these relationships are going to lead you.
So true.
Yeah. So that guy at Paul Brown Stadium who got me into the recruiting industry, who owned the Veteran Career Fair company. And he was like, "Look, why don't you join me?" You know, when we first started way back when, we did a lot of the contingent recruiting stuff. He was like, "So join me. You'll take over the recruiting division. We'll hire you 20 recruiters and we'll just go nuts. We'll take over the whole veteran recruiting space." And I'm like,
"Wow."
Yeah. I was like, "Well, that sounds cool." You know? So I ended up doing that. And, I'll tell you what, and you know, hopefully he listens to this interview at some point in time. He texted me like 3 months after starting that job. He texted me. He was like, "Hey, can you meet me for breakfast?" And I'm like, "Sure." Met him for breakfast. He's like, "Look, no way I could have seen this coming." He's like, "But I got an offer, you know, from a venture capital firm."
Wow.
And I'm going to take it. And I'm like, "Wow, okay. So I was like, all these years, man, we've been friends, and I finally joined, and you know, now you're going to sell the company. And and so now there's a board, you know, that I'm reporting to. A new CEO comes in.
Corporate just tracked you back down, Scott.
Well, I know, man. So new CEO comes in. He's a good guy. He's another Marine.
Yeah, of course.
So we make friends right away. Peter, really good guy. But it became evident right away that they weren't going to invest any money into the professional services and recruiting part of this business. They were just trying to elevate the value of that career fair machine and then turn it over for a profit in 5 years. And I don't even mean that in a bad way. I mean, that's what they do. That's perfectly fine. But seeing that, I approached my wife, and since I had just went through this entire adventure with Sarah Lee of divesting brands, right? That was in my head. So I'm like, look, I approached the board and I'm like, why don't we divest the recruiting division? I'll buy it from you.
Yeah.
I'll give you this amount of money. I'll finance the rest. I finance it through them internally. I'll take all the staff, the people that we had hired. We had a small staff. So you'll be saving money. You won't have to worry about paying those salaries. I'll take all that. We'll share. And even all the clients that are coming over that are historically recruit military clients, we'll even split those revenues, you know, so 50-50. So, and of course the board was like, hell yeah, take that. It's all yours. You can have it. I probably didn't need to offer him anything. I probably could have had it for free in retrospect, but you know.
Yeah.
And so there it was. And now Veteran Talent is technically the former recruiting division of Recruit Military. But you know, here we are now. I guess we were legally separated in May of 2014. So just over 8 years. And we don't have any shared clients anymore. They didn't care about recruiting. We don't care about career fairs. You know what I'm saying? So we just went our separate ways. And
so what's so interesting to me about your story is kind of like some of these zigs and zags where you didn't, you know, I mean, this wasn't, if you're saying this is a roadmap, right? And a business plan of a life, if you will, like there's a lot of like turns that you made along the way. And the reason why I bring that up is because, well, we all go through that, right? But specifically now as well. So recording this in 2022, a lot of people are considering, you know, becoming entrepreneurs. Maybe some people are going through some of those, shifts in the corporate landscape that are affecting them. And maybe they're kind of thinking about, does this make sense for me to stay where I'm at or to do something new? So as you were going through some of these changes, like what are some of the things that kind of helped you get through it and also maybe turn some of those initial things that where you thought maybe this is a bad thing and, you know, lemonade, right? Like, and to make it into a good thing. So how did you cope with that?
So, well, and I'm blessed. Honestly, it's one of my, and all of us have privileges, right? It's every single one of us. So it's just all about identifying where your strengths are and capitalizing on those strengths, you know? And like my wife will tell you, you know, she never would have been an entrepreneur or gone on her own if she hadn't married me. But, you know, so I'm just that guy that's like, yeah, let's try this. But to your point, and I'm trying to get this, we have a college age daughter too, who's realized she's about to graduate and she can't stand what she's majoring in. And it's terrifying her. And I'm like, look, don't worry about it. You know, life is nothing more than a chaotic swirl of unpredictable events. And it is all about how you, with no seeming correlation whatsoever, you know, and it's all about how you respond to those events and what you do with them. And to your point, I couldn't have predicted where I am today. And there were a lot of uncertainties, especially, being in a partnership with somebody, a spouse, a life partner, they perceive things differently than you. They adopt stress differently than you. And that's a very important consideration too. I think I put my wife through a lot of stress with our journey into entrepreneurship, especially when it comes to cash flow and things like that. And that's one thing that most people never become entrepreneurs, and most people never own their own business. And most people don't understand the difference between revenue and cash. You know, most people just see sales and think that equals money, you know, and I get into that debate with people all the time. It's like, oh, look at this giant company with, you know, $48 billion worth of sales. And it's like, that doesn't mean they have $48 billion.
Yeah.
You know? So there's a whole lot there. And then you get into, you know, cash and cash flow is a whole different, it's a whole different monster.
Yeah.
You know? So, so things get very tricky, but I guess at the end of the day, as tricky and as stressful as things get, it's just all about perseverance and confidence. And that's really what it's about. And I teach that quote to our son, our 9-year-old son, all the time from Coolidge. I know not everybody's favorite former president, right? But he had this great quote, and I'm not going to be able to just pull it out of my head, and so forgive me about that. But it's a, but it's about perseverance, you know. Yeah. And he says something about like how you know, it's not about education. The world is full of unsuccessful smart people. Mm-hmm. You know, really what it's about, and it's not about talent either necessarily. Yeah. You know, the world is full of wasted talent. You find wasted mm-hmm. talent anywhere. It's really all about perseverance. Those who are unwilling to quit. And those who are unwilling to give up. And we've had a million opportunities, Adam, to quit. I mean, we really have. I have had numerous job offers, especially early on, you know, in our venture. I don't get as many nowadays. I think people look at, you know, I'm nearly 10 years as the CEO of this company. They're like, oh, I'm not going to bother that guy. You know, but many, many opportunities to just take a position somewhere, a similar position. Mm-hmm. I know what it's like to work for a large company and have a nice large salary with health benefits and, you know, retirement plans. And all of those things are very nice. And they create a lot of a sense of security. But honestly, that's all it is in my mind. It's a sense. It's your sense of security. If you really want to build your security for yourself and create mechanisms of value that people want to voluntarily interact with, and you'll never have to worry about it. Even if the economy were to collapse or the dollar were to collapse. Which I think it's going to. That's one other topic, you know. But it's not going to matter. If you have a system that creates value, people are going to need that value no matter how what currency they want to pay for it. And, you know, it's not going to matter.
Tell us about your concept at Climb, and of course, tell us more about Veteran Talent. So you told us, you know, kind of how it came to be and how it you spun it off essentially. But tell us a little bit more about the companies.
So Veteran Talent, we're a little bit different, you know, in that most, not all, but most veteran recruiting companies. It's a tiny niche, by the way.
Yeah.
The veteran recruiting space, and it's a challenging niche too, because you know when you take like a recruiting niche like IT. For instance, and you can even break that down even further and be like, not only are we an IT recruiting firm, Adam, but we are an SAP IT recruiting firm. We only do ERP implementations. We only do SAP. And then it's like you can hone in on that specific thing that you do and really market your services for that thing. Now, we do veterans. However, the tricky thing is that veterans do everything.
You know?
So veterans are into IT and manufacturing operations, CDL drivers, you know, maintenance, mechanics, field service tech, you name it. So it's hard for us to hone in our branding on who's going to want veterans because abstractly, like everybody wants veterans, you know? And so that makes it a little difficult. And so what happened in the veteran recruiting world is there was this creation of a brand, a product, and that was uniquely valuable. And what that was more often than not, transitioning JMOs. I don't know if you're familiar with what that is, but those are junior military officers, right? So I was one of those myself at one time, you know? So that's usually finding guys and girls that are in that 6 to 8 year range in, and they're looking to transition out officers. So they have their degrees. Usually you can find, you know, the folks from West Point or the Naval Academy, stuff like that, that are very attracted to large corporations for their leadership development programs. And then you create events around those transitioning folks. And, you would, you know, go out and recruit 30, 40, 50 transitioning JMOs to come to this, you know, stadium and have this event. Then you get like 15, 20, 30 companies to come and interview all these, high performing, you know, transitioning folks. And of course, they pay large contingent fees and they make great money. The problem is, though, it's not a problem. It's a fine product. But you're basically ignoring all the rest of the veteran talent pool. You know, so all the folks that don't have degrees, all the enlisted folks. And and not only that, but a lot of people focus on that, the whole aspect of transitioning veterans, those that are transitioning out of the military. But honestly, I mean, you're talking about 250,000 folks transition out of the military every year.
Yeah.
Where there are about 17 million or so veterans in the workforce at any given time. So to only focus on that tiny little niche of just transitioning folks, you're ignoring all the other 17 million folks that are in the workforce. Yeah. So we focus on all veterans in all aspects, degreed, non-degreed, do a lot in manufacturing, skilled trade, and we don't just look for folks that are transitioning, you know, if we'll partner with folks that transitioned out 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago and created some sort of career or set of experiences in some specific industry that our client really needs. So that's where we spend most of our time. Well, I'm sorry, that's where we spend all of our time, really. Filling jobs where we can. You know, I'm like any good entrepreneur. I don't turn down business when it comes my way. So we have filled roles in, you know, manufacturing, maintenance, engineering, IT, security. We have filled roles from hourly all the way up through C-suite. So, you know, I think the highest position that I filled in the past was CFO. Haven't done any CEOs yet at this point in time, but, you know, CFO is the highest I filled. So, and we have some very large, well-known brands that we partner with. And then at the same time, we have a long tail of small companies that partner with us as well. So we started out doing all things staffing because I came from that realm of doing all things staffing. So that in my mind, that's the way the company should be structured. So, you know, we did sort of hourly staffing work where, you know, I would employ the person, put them on my W-2, and then I would bill the client as they worked. And we did that for a while. But we realized after a few years that that really wasn't a good fit for what we were trying to accomplish. So now we really just do direct placement and just focus on that. And but again, I keep that acute aspect of the provision of value. I've had a lot of companies over time that try to offer us like retainer fees, you know, to really kind of capture our attention and capture our time. I've always turned those down. I've never accepted one. I don't accept a fee unless we pay somebody.
Wow.
So if we haven't provided value to you, I don't want your money.
And so, you know, as I look at your brand, as I look at what you're doing, it's just, it's so consistent. So I want to get into the book and also talk about your podcast as well, but it's consistent. But what I love about it is that you're not only educating the people, but it just matches. Like, you're giving so much value in terms of the things and your experiences that you've been through, of course, and you're being a benefit to others. So let's maybe start with the book. Let's start there. So More Than Security Guards, How Veterans Make Great Employees in an Industry. What was the inspiration for this?
Well, I think the inspiration for that was that kind of consistent messaging within the market that the government does a horrible job at helping our service members transition into the civilian workforce.
Yeah.
My position on that really is thank God. Thank God they do a horrible job at that, because, and I'm not even trying to be funny. I mean, honestly,
I know, but it is funny to think about.
It is because, just like, you know, you as a non-veteran, or not even you, Adam, but just anybody who finds himself in an HR or hiring capacity within a civilian firm that never was in the military. And in their mind, they're like, I just don't understand what it's like to be in the military. I don't understand these veterans. I don't understand what I'm getting myself into.
Yeah.
Well, that same aspect applies on the other side too, right? Mm-hmm. So all those people that spent their entire lives in the military that are in, you know, general grade officer positions and above, or they're administrators within the government, they don't understand the civilian world just as like you don't understand their world. So to think that they're going to be able to design a program that's going to effectively transition these folks over into this civilian, again, everybody's going to be a security guard.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to be a cop, you know? So, and some people want to do that, and that's awesome. But that's not what we, and every single, I think I said this in the book, is that, you know, every single time I took one of these quizzes, you know, they're like, hey, to answer these questions, and we'll tell you what the right career path is for you. Every single time, Adam, it was security. And I'm like, look, I have a degree in finance. And even when my 13 years in the military, my 8 years enlisted, I was focused on cryptography and the intelligence world. And then my 5 years as a commissioned officer, I was an intelligence officer. So I have 13 years of military intelligence and a finance degree in economics. How does that equate to security?
You know,
like, where am I going to fit in the world of security or law enforcement or anything like that? Now, granted, it doesn't necessarily obviously transition to recruiting either.
Of course.
You know? But at least that's manifested through my voluntary actions and choices, right? So, and I just have to imagine, you know, if I'm putting those inputs in with my background, then everybody's getting the same, you know, you should be in security. So that was my take on that, was that, you know, if don't try to feel like there needs to be some sort of a top-down solution to veteran transition. These are all individuals. A veteran is not a veteran. A veteran is just an individual like you and me and everything else. They have a billion things that are influencing their decisions and their preferences and their desires. God knows where they're going to end up, you know? So just give them the freedom to find their way to where it is they want to be. You know, and that's my whole thing. And don't be afraid of hiring veterans because you think that maybe you don't understand the military landscape. You don't, but don't worry about it. You know, you hire people from other industries all the time, you know? So if you're in aerospace, you hire a, a welder or a field service tech who has spent their entire life in marine aviation, you know, fixing whatever it is, fixing boats. You still hire them and you're comfortable hiring them, even though you don't know anything about that industry. You know, it's no different. But just interview them, get to know them and make those offers, you know, because you're going to find a lot of good team members that are going to use that military experience from a leadership standpoint. And they'll contribute a lot to your culture and they'll contribute a lot to your team, because honestly, that is one thing I will say, as much as I stand opposed, to a lot of things politically, you know, especially I'm one of these anti-war Marines. So, you know, that's kind of where I landed on the topic, but I honestly don't think that anybody trains leaders better than the military, and certainly not the Marine Corps. So, and I get into that in the book as well. So, but they train leaders through experience, you know, and they train leaders in a way that, you know, you would get sued for trying to do it on the civilian side.
So, of course.
So it's very beneficial to get that kind of experience and that kind of confidence into your organization.
And so now you followed up the book which by the way, for everybody watching, we'll be putting the link in the show notes so that you can pick up a copy and you can go in depth into Scott's writing. But you followed that up now with a podcast. So tell us a little bit more about the inspiration, the types of conversations that you plan on having. I believe you're a couple episodes in and got a whole lot more scheduled. So tell us a little bit more about your vision.
Absolutely. So, so you guys were talking to me about the podcast, and initially I admit I was, you know, pretty standoffish and just like, no, absolutely not. And
we got you. I've been hearing you talk this whole time. Are you kidding me? If you don't think we're not going to put you on our network, you're on the network, buddy. I was hunting you down. I'm a recruiter too. I recruit podcast hosts.
There you go. And as like I told you, I've had many people over the years be like, Scott, you need to start a podcast. I'm like, when I would think of podcasting, you think of Joe Rogan. Or, you know, somebody like that. And it's like, look, I don't want to get up and just talk about current events or politics. Yeah. And I'll, you know, personally, I will publish articles from time to time, political articles with the, I'll give myself up here, I guess, but with the Libertarian Institute, even though I don't even technically see myself as a libertarian. But that said, I will publish articles in from time to time. But I was like, I don't really want to spend my time just getting up and debating with people over the legitimacy of authority or government or anything like that. You know, it's like, I've got other things going on. So, but then it hit me, I was like, you know, cause and really it was you and your mission and what you guys were all about that really kind of channeled my thinking as to what can I talk about that's business focused, business related, keeps on point. And it brought me to Climb. So my other company, our startup that we're manifesting, which is an AI enabled recruitment advertising and employer branding workspace. So is what that's going to be. And I thought, you know, this would be a great marketing tool over time for that. And just because, and even Climb, once we do go live and we have an MVP and we can put that live and let people interact with it, I never really envisioned, you know, marketing that in a traditional sort of way, like buying Facebook ads and, you know what I'm saying? I never envisioned doing that. Yeah. I still don't. In my mind, what I'd like to do is create value again, just to market the company through value. And by that, I mean, go out there, find content, create content, make stories, write stories. Where are jobs coming? Where are businesses building? Where are they laying companies off? Where are factories shutting down? And create that content. And then, spread that content through media channels, you know, and get, because everybody's looking for stories, right? Of course. So if it's ABC News or CNN, if you've got a great article or a great video that you captured with some VP somewhere about, you know, they're going to be bringing on hiring 125 people in Austin, Texas, or whatever it might be. So that was my vision, and then attributing all of that content back to Climb. Then I thought, man, I could do that with a podcast, and this is a great time to do that. To talk about hiring, because as you know, we're in the middle of the great resignation, you know, that people like to playfully talk about, but it's a serious issue. It really is. And so as a recruiter talking to you live, I mean, I can tell you, like when COVID started a couple of years ago, I immediately started having issues with my skilled trade positions, my hourly folks, field service techs, welders, folks like that. Calls weren't being returned when I would interview somebody, schedule them with a hiring manager and they wouldn't show up to the interview. You know, I mean, just crazy stuff. And it was like, man, this sucks. So if in the past I had to reach out to 100 people to get three viable candidates, now I'm suddenly having to reach out to 200, 250 people to get three viable candidates, you know, and it makes a big difference from a, from a labor standpoint and an investment Absolutely. Standpoint. So, however, I was still having a pretty normal time with my higher level roles, you know, 150K a year and up, leadership positions, you know, high-end IT positions. I was still filling them the same as I ever was. So I was, you know, still making some money. But now, you know, I have seen over the last, you know, the back half, the first half of this year and into last year, I'm starting to struggle with those positions too. So now I'm getting, you know, $250,000 a year jobs and folks not showing up to interviews.
Wow.
And it's like, right. It's like, are you kidding me? You
know? Yeah.
And so you start looking at the labor force participation rate and which is painfully low. Incredibly, it is starting to eke back up, it seems, but we'll see how that continues to trend. And I just feel like people have collectively, I'm not talking about anybody individually,
I
feel like people have largely shifted the way that they have learned to exist in the world and in the economy. So a lot of this comes down to kids too. So you've got a lot of people in the workforce are active parents with young children. I read somewhere, don't quote me on this, but I read somewhere that 70% of the people who are now out of the workforce that, that were in the workforce pre-COVID are women. And if that is true, I believe it. And I think that comes down to like even the schools. So the way the schools responded to COVID, and you never know if your kid was going to be sent home or was exposed to somebody or had a quarantine for 14 days. And that families probably, you know, a lot of moms out there were probably like, you know, I just, I can't just take off work for 14 days whenever the school says that your kid has to sit at home for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think a lot of folks ended up just finding different ways to, whether it's through, you know, little Etsy boards or DoorDash or different way, you know, different ways to make a few bucks. Now you've just got one steady income in the house.
Yeah.
And the other one's a little unsteady, but I think people just largely found a different way to make it in the world. And then in response to that, that's tightened the labor market so drastically that it's hard to fill almost any role, especially if you don't have a role that you're willing to consider remote work.
Right.
So that's one of the biggest things now. I'm talking to candidates. One of the very first questions I get is like, well, is this position remote? And it's like, well, actually my client's looking for somebody that might be able to travel 50%. And then you'll be surprised at how many people are like, well, forget it.
Wow.
Okay. You know, nice to talk with you, you know, and you got to let them go. But so that said, I thought, you know, this would be an excellent platform to allow companies, individuals, executives to get on and sell themselves, sell their opportunity, sell their company. Why would you want to work for this company? Why would you want to work in this industry? Where can you take your career starting off at this level? Because, you know, let's be honest, it's a job description doesn't cut it. I mean, let's be honest, Adam, a job description has never cut it, ever.
Yeah.
And now it definitely doesn't, you know? So if somebody reads your job description, you know, they're just like, but if they hear you, Adam, on the line, having a 20-minute conversation with Scott about your company, the industry that you're working in, why you're passionate about it, why it matters, why this role matters to the company and to the organization, and where you can take your career from here, then all of a sudden, that's not a job description anymore. That's a living thing.
Yeah. You know?
So my hope is that, you know, after these folks get on and have conversations with me, they'll put a link to our conversation right on their job description, right on their career page.
Yeah. You know?
And it's like, here's the welder position. Here's the location. Here's the job description. Here's, and then click here for, you know, for this conversation on the hiring line, and then attribute that all back to Climb. You see what I'm saying? And that's kind of how it all started. So
no, it makes total sense. And it's a great ecosystem, and it's great content because you're bringing on, you know, people that are providing opportunity. You're bringing on, you know, different points of view. So I think it's great. And I'm happy to be a part of it and to publish your work and to really get the message out there because you're doing great things. Being said, Scott, if somebody is listening to this and they want to learn more and to connect and engage with veteran talent, or, you know, as Climb progresses and all the other projects you're working on, I mean, what's the best way for people to follow up?
Not by cell phone. So apologize. I mean, I'm probably like everybody else in the world right now. I just get littered all day long with random phone calls, and I don't know who any of these people are, so I don't pick up the phone. So, but LinkedIn is an excellent way. I've got a large following on LinkedIn. I really don't even know why. I think it's just because of what we do, and it's veteran centric, and that appeals to a lot of people. But I think I've got 17 or 18,000 followers or connections on there. So I'll continue to accept connections as long as LinkedIn will let me. And I accept everybody. So, you know, even if, it's obvious that you're going to try and sell me PVC piping from China, which does happen from time to time. I'll still accept them. So, you know, connect with me on there. I'm very easy to find. And that would certainly probably be the easiest path for anybody to get in touch with me.
Awesome. And we'll put the links in the show notes so that everybody can just click on it and head right on over. And speaking of the audience, if this is your first time with Mission Matters or engaging on with the platform, we're all about bringing on business owners, entrepreneurs, executives, and having them share their passion, their mission, you know, why they do what they do, how they're doing it, and really what we can all learn from it and how we can all benefit, right? We're all growing together. So if that's the type of content that you're into or sounds interesting or exciting or fun or engaging, I don't know, hit that subscribe button. We have many more mission-based entrepreneurs and individuals coming up on the line, and we don't want you to miss a thing. And Scott, I'm excited to continue to listen to your show. We're just getting started on the book promo, so I'm excited to work with you on that as well. And thanks again for your time, and thanks for coming on the show.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Adam.